And the meeting is called to order. Thank you. And we will begin our meeting as we usually do with a moment of silence. Thank you. And if you will all stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to take just a moment for Planning Commissioner announcements. Any announcements from the Commission this evening? No?
Richard. You know, I do have one. I just wanted to thank the community that came out to support the bike park. My grandson is overjoyed and looking forward to that bike park being developed.
Terrific. Great. Okay, this is the time for the public to have their say. If there are any members of the public who are present that would like to comment on anything which is not on tonight's agenda, this would be the time. Come forward, give us your name, and have your say. Looks like we've got no takers on that one. So then we will proceed to the consent calendar. We have the minutes of the Planning Commission meeting from December 16th. And we have the current and advanced planning processing list to receive and file. Are there any questions or comments on either one of those items? Scott, do you have any?
No, again, it's just for your information. If there, you know, it shows things that are coming on to the coming through the process, things that you might see in the future, and that's kind of why we give it to you, so you kind of can take a look at it, and you can also see things that you've looked at and approved and that are making their way through the building permit process, so it kind of gives you a feel for what's happening, you know, development-wise in Morro Bay.
And it seems like the list keeps getting longer, so that's a good thing, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Pardon?
So do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Move to approve.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Four ayes, and Commissioner Lucas abstains. Okay, so then we will move on to our public hearings. Our first public hearing is item B1. This is case number UP0-391. Located at 510 Fresno Street in Morro Bay, California. And I think Whitney's not here tonight, so I think Scott's going to give us the lowdown.
Thank you, Chair Teff, members of the Commission. We have before you this evening a conditional use permit application located at 510 Fresno. You can see it there on the screen, outlined in green. It's kind of one of our favorite types of things that come before the Commission. It's an expansion of a non-conforming structure that exceeds 25% of the existing square footage of the home. The proposal is to add 444 square foot garage, and then an area above it for a workshop type of space of 383 square feet, and then 94 square feet of additional second story decking. That would be in addition to an existing 1,700 square foot home. This is a Google Street View of the lot, and you can see the existing garage, one car garage. Straight ahead, there's a small shed over to the right, and then you can see the existing house is two-story, kind of sitting back there, back behind the vegetation. There's the existing site plan for the project. There's lines, the darker lines there are really just pedestrian paths that walk into the site. The driveway is more towards the bottom of the lot there, and extending back to that driveway into that existing garage. You'll see that existing garage is non-conforming with regard to the side yard setback. At approximately a foot and a half, something like that. It's also non-conforming with regard to the rear yard setback. This is the proposed site plan. You see the new garage and workshop area. with the additional stairs and decking kind of hatched out there more towards the front of the lot. You have the existing front elevation where you see, again, the existing single car garage. You can note that there's the existing two-story house. And then the roof deck, this house has kind of been added onto over time. There's been various permits that have gone along with the gone along over time that have added those different pieces that you see there. It was originally, I think, a single level home when it was originally constructed. Here you see the addition added onto the front. You kind of have the garage sitting up front, and then sort of a wedding cake action to the second floor, stepping it in from the sides, and then with a little railing and deck feature at the front. This is the side elevation on the south. This is the existing elevation. Here's the existing south elevation with the addition at the front. In the hatched area to the left, excuse me. This is the existing rear elevation. This is the existing north elevation, and because that's at zero lot line, you don't see any windows or openings along that side because it's too close to the property line. Can't have openings in. And then you have the addition shown there to the right. Now, you don't see windows in this. Windows could be added to this if the Planning Commission desired. It's just kind of a blank wall face there. The addition is required to meet setback requirements, so openings are not an issue here. Might be something the Planning Commission would like, might want to discuss. Not a requirement, but certainly something we've talked about in our design guideline discussions in the past. These are the development statistics that go along with the property. You'll see that with the additions that are proposed, the property in the project is at the maximum allowed lot coverage of 45%. And you can see that it has the non-conforming setbacks there as well on the side. And that's it. With that, staff is recommending approval of the project. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Scott. Are there any questions for staff? Michael.
I know this is probably more building code than planning, but this is such a problematic house. I thought I'd ask it now. You called it a zero lot line, but it was not designed as a zero lot line house, was it? It doesn't have the kind of fire ratings on the exterior wall?
No, not to my knowledge it doesn't. That's correct. But it was originally built right up against the property line, and when it came forward through through the additions that took place back in the 80s, they received approval of variance to the side yard setback to allow basically the addition that came forward in the two-car garage that exists there, in the two-car tandem garage. It was, I think, originally a single car space with a carport that later got enclosed, but they granted a variance to allow that side setback to match the existing. So it was something that's sort of been perpetuated over time with this, although fast forward to today and the addition is proposed to meet the setback requirement.
And we wouldn't be advocating this type of construction of the existing house in any way if somebody came forward. I mean, it's not really a zero lot line structure, and it's got gutters and downspouts and that setback that if the neighbor availed themselves, you'd end up having to have someone much thinner than me go in there to do any kind of maintenance involved.
It certainly is why we have setbacks. You have setbacks to allow for that, circulation around the house and so forth. This was constructed I think before our current codes, and so it was allowed to be closer to the rear property line and side property line than would otherwise normally be allowed.
So the other thing that I'm remembering from the days when I was more in active practice was at a certain percentage of value of the house, you have to go back and upgrade other aspects of the house. Are we in the square footage where we have to go back and modify things code-wise for the rest of the house?
There's no requirement to go back and modify the rest of the existing house. We did have our building division look at it mm-hmm. prior to this, and there's no issue from that standpoint. It's just the addition has to meet current code requirements.
And they had no comment about the gas service and the electric service and that 1.5 foot right away. I mean, I have no idea how one accesses that without getting on one's neighbor's property.
Yeah, no, there was no commentary that was provided really for that.
I guess my only concern is even if the building code is comfortable with some of this stuff, we're necessarily putting a burden on a neighbor for someone to maintain the house where there's not adequate room to maintain a house. I mean, I don't want to get into a comment, but I mean, it strikes me that when I look at it, that's the first thing that jumped out at me is there was no city comment on the fact that the utility infrastructure and so much of the perimeter wall was already in kind of a zero lot line kind of configuration.
Yeah, our codes, you know, deal with existing non-conforming structures and simply say, you know, when you're doing additions, you're supposed to make the additions comply. There's no requirement that you go back and reach back into the structure to make it conform. You know, I would say, with the exception of if you were tearing most of it down, you know, kind of long gone are the days where you leave the non-conforming 2x4 in the corner, and that grandfathers you in. When you do things like that, that's when we make you comply, because you're really tearing down the structure and starting over. And that also gets back to some of the issue where you're talking about the valuation and having to bring things up to code. I mean, it's sort of similar to that.
I guess the last two things I was also concerned about is, as I couldn't find the nomenclature for what this garage configuration is, because it's really, it's not a tandem, it's a tridem.
I'm not going to argue with you there. Yeah, this house and the design and how it's been added onto over time is unique.
I was just wondering, do we have anything dealing with situations like this? I mean, it just in the abstract, at some point, how many cars lined up face to bumper becomes an issue.
This is certainly an anomaly from a project standpoint, because again, the house was, you know, the original house was pushed way back in the back and then over to the side. Normally, you're not going to have that. You're going to have a house meeting setback requirements, and it's not going to have the room to do something like this, where you could have three cars like in tandem. That's just not going to be available to you on most lots. This is sort of unique from that standpoint.
Do we have any? I'll save the last one till comments, I guess. Okay, that's all I've got.
I have a couple comments. Clarification, too. On the code analysis on the plans, it was talking about a three-story house. I assume that that's an error and it is a two-story house, or are they talking about the deck on the top counting for the third story?
I can't speak to why that was indicated on the plans. I mean, you did point that out to me before the meeting, and also has a 40-foot height limit.
It had a 40-foot height.
We don't follow the development standards that they put on the plans. We follow the development standards that are in our codes.
Okay.
So I guess we could have pointed it out and had them change the plans. I don't know to what effect. I mean, we make them meet our requirements, and so it'll be compliant with our height and so forth.
The only other thing I wanted to talk about is, and perhaps you can educate me a little bit, is there are several structures on the property already. I think that there is, other than the house and the garage, there is a shed.
In the front,
In the front, and there is a secondary shed in the front, too. And do we have some kind of code that allows for those two sheds to remain if there is, if we approve?
There are accessory structures that are located outside of the setback. I'm not aware of a limitation to the number. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
Scott, isn't there a planning condition in the proposal that requires them to remove one of the sheds?
You know, there.
I did
you
read
might,
that.
You might be correct. Yeah. One of the I did talk to.
But I have no idea what's in the backyard. I didn't know if there was additional sheds. So.
Well, there isn't any backyard.
Yeah, there is no backyard.
Smidgen.
Their house is spaghetti. I thought it was like planning five
one.
Or planning.
Oh, the with this, yeah, they do have to remove one of the sheds, but that has to do with lot coverage.
Okay.
Not the number that you're allowed to have, simply that it exceeds lot coverage with it.
It would taking it up to the current percentage unless they removed one.
Yeah, it would be over if
right.
If they didn't. So that's why it's conditioned.
Thank you.
Just.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Does this have to go by the fire department?
Fire department reviews all plans for additions, yes.
Okay. Could there be a requirement for them to sprinkler that zero wall, or to either bring it up to code or to sprinkler it?
No, it has to do with the size of additions.
Okay. So rather than risk, it would be more.
Yeah, we have with the limitation. It's
I have the...
If I remember right, seeing it, there's eaves and stuff that would be pretty, you know, combustible.
There are for the existing, yeah, but there's no requirement that you change those. Those are existing non-conforming situations that are allowed to remain. They're allowed to be maintained, the way that they are. There's no requirement that they have to upgrade them in any fashion.
Okay. Nothing requiring an etumescent paint or anything on there that would...
No.
Okay.
No requirements for that.
And then on the... got a question about the driveway. If we can bring up the plot plan. Okay, they're proposing a 20-foot wide driveway all the way to the street, and if I remember right, it's a gravel. I thought we had limitations as far as street widths for driveways, and if we allow this, then there's going to be, with the driveway next door to it, it's going to be driveway, and I was wondering if we have the ability to reduce the width of that so that it drops back down into about a 12-foot access.
The Planning Commission could require a condition that reduces the width of the driveway, yes.
Okay. And on the gravel drive, there was a note on there that's a non-conforming material. What's your feelings on that?
It is that you could require it to be paved with AC paving.
Okay.
That could be a condition that's added to the project. You can require that to have an improved surface.
Can we require it to be bordered so that the gravel doesn't migrate?
Certainly. Yeah, okay. We could add that. You could have it be paver so it's permeable. You have options as it relates to that. It's within your discretion, in other words.
Okay. Thank you.
Richard?
Yeah, just kind of following up with Commissioner Luer regarding the driveway. So I would like to just kind of echo what he said, and also I'd like to hear from the people on this as well.
I just had a question about it looks like a laundry platform in one of the garages, which appears to substantially reduce the length of that garage to the point that it may not be feasible to park a car in there. And so how do we deal with that in terms of the number of actual parking spaces that are on site currently? And was that permitted? And was there a parking exception granted in order to put that in there?
Parking exception was requested at one point, was not granted, and then the house came back with a carport. So it had tandem, carport, then garage at one point, and then they enclosed the carport portion of it at some point. And so you had two basically tandem spaces. And it's unclear when that laundry got there. I don't see on any of the plans that we have that was ever approved. But with the new addition, you're still going to have two garage parking spaces. So it'll be compliant. The question then would be, was the existing laundry area and the electrical and things that went along with that
inspected,
done with permits? And if they couldn't provide that, they'd have to get after the fact permits for it, because that would be an improvement that's shown on their plans that we don't have any records of permits that were pulled for it.
Right. But then, let's say that the current permit is not issued, is not approved by the Planning Commission, then they would need to get a parking exception because they don't really have two covered enclosed parking spaces?
No, we'd be going after them because we're aware of it at this point, and they submitted an application, and they'd have to remove it. And they have other locations where they could have a washer and dryer, so that's not an issue inside of the garage. The garage is wide enough, they could put it along the side. So I don't think it's an issue. I just think where they have it now, it precludes two cars from parking in tandem in the garage, as you noted. So when they do the addition with the additional garage, they'll have the tandem. So if they were to gain approval, it's fine. There's no issue. If they weren't, then we'd be looking at having them rectify that situation.
Okay. Thank you.
One more question?
Yeah. Sorry to go out of turn here, but Another question that's going to come up
that formal.
is that the future conversion of another owner of the upstairs shop space, conversion probably to, you know, I could see that easily being converted, you know, bootlegged in a secondary living unit. What, with their parking arrangement here, they essentially would have a minimum of 3 covered parking spaces. What else would be required for them to comply with their secondary?
Yeah, you'd have to have a parking space. Well, actually, it probably wouldn't be compliant now with that laundry area in the garage, but they could reconfigure it to create the 3rd parking space, or they could have parking outside of that area.
Well, you'd have 2 in the garage, in the new garage.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then you'd have a tandem
in
the existing.
So that could work for the secondary unit requirement. The idea is that those are things that you could rent out to other folks, or they could be available for family. So that's the intent behind the secondary unit ordinance, mm-hmm. that would be compliant, and they would be able to get a secondary unit permit from us if they wanted to. As it sits right now, there's a deed restriction requirement on the permit because of the sink.
Okay.
So, but they could get a secondary unit if they wanted to.
They are actually setting it up, so it's fairly consistent with our ordinances for a secondary unit then.
Yeah, there wouldn't be an issue. I mean, they could have said, "Hey, we don't want to do the deed restriction," and they could have decided that we'll do the secondary unit permit and had that come with it in case they wanted to do it in the future, and that would have been completely acceptable.
Yeah.
But that's not what they really are looking to use this area as a shop area, mm-hmm. from all accounts.
So tandem parking would be allowed, mm-hmm. in that situation.
It's an option. Certainly, there's not a requirement. There's nothing that says you can't have that. So yeah, it would be. Yes.
Okay, great.
Would they need to? It's now an unconditioned space, right? It's not going to have heat and air conditioning. Would they have to rectify that to make it into a second unit?
Yes.
Thank you.
Could I just add?
Sure.
I got a question for you. When you call something a storage, as opposed to living, does the structural integrity of the upper floor require a higher load capacity or capability? In other words, like the amount of force per square foot. I remember doing a project one time and calling something storage required a lot more substructure. Are you requiring that because it's called storage as opposed to living space? In other words, like people store stuff, they have a lot more weight per square foot. You know?
In a commercial situation, that's the case.
Okay.
For residential, I don't know if it's the case or not.
Okay.
That's a building code requirement that would be reviewed as part of the building permit submittal.
Okay.
I do know that they do have special requirements that go along when you call things out of storage in a commercial capacity.
Okay.
But for residential, I'm not completely sure.
Okay.
Again, that'll be something that I have to research, but it is something that will be reviewed when they do submit for their building permit. So it will be covered as part of that.
You're going to take a look over it. Okay.
I think exterior decks go up to 100. Interior, I think, is at 40. But I'm not mistaken. There could be something about exclusively bedroom goes down to 25. That's vague memory.
Yeah, I remember in San Luis County, I think it was 150. Per square foot on storage.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for staff? Okay. So this is the time for public comment, and we as typically we would like to hear first from either the applicant or the applicant's representative if they are here.
Good evening. Staff and board members. I'm the architect and the agent for the owner, and we have reviewed your staff report and we've reviewed your proposed resolution with the conditions of approval, which for your information do include paving of the driveway, removal of the one shed, and a deed restriction to make sure that the shop space above is not used as a residential use. It will be for a shop and auto restoration space. And we have no problem with the conditions of approval, and we're in agreement with staff's recommendation. And I'm available for any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for the representative? Pardon? We will, sure. I just, while he's here, I was just wanted to know if anyone had questions to ask for him.
I'll also remain here.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't think there's any questions at this time. Are there other members of the public that would like to speak, that would like to comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to commission for discussion. Who'd like to lead off?
Question. Can we open up public comment again?
Sure. Yeah. We'll reopen public comment for a question.
Sorry. Part of a comment, part of a question. I don't personally have a problem with the gravel as a non-permeable, as a permeable surface. The only thing I have a problem with it as is just the migration of it as the vehicles go back and forth on it. So, is it your preference to have it as gravel or to?
No, we thought that was what you guys really wanted to have, so we just left it gravel. Probably be brick or some kind of pavers, you know, something that allows the water to permeate through it, but still creates a clean, drivable surface.
Okay.
You're advocating in your resolution here to use asphalt or pavers or eco pavers, or so, you know, we're negotiable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, what are your feelings or what are your comments on reducing the width of the driveway? So
Well, it's a two-car garage, so you want to be able to drive two cars into it. To reduce the driveway means you'd have to have a wide part up mm-hmm. by the house, and it'd have to narrow back down. It's mm-hmm. It kind of creates problems backing your car out of the garage. I don't know if it's that much of an aesthetic improvement based on the rest of what you see up and down the streets. It's pretty standard when you have a two-car garage, you have a two-car wide driveway. So.
Yeah, but usually your garage door is only going to be 16 feet wide at the most. So, you know, your driveway is 20.
We usually make them as wide as the garage. The garage has to be 20 feet wide by your code.
Right.
So if you want it 16 feet wide, I'm sure we can accommodate that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, since you have the microphone, why don't you start us off?
Okay. This is, you know, as far as comments go, this is kind of like a coral reef. It's just kind of, through the years, it's kind of aggregated parts and bits, and so I can, you know, I can see problems with the way the form has taken shape, but I don't see any really code requirements that, you know, or problems with this new addition as far as this extra extra structure there. I would like to see, as Scott mentioned, maybe some more articulation on that south side. Seeing as that is going to be exposed to passerbys, I would like to reduce the driveway to a maximum of 16 feet. And Scott, we do have a maximum approach, right? Okay. Memory somehow says it's. To me, it seems like 16 feet is our maximum. But other than that, I could see this as easily being converted to a secondary unit with the existing parking. So, I mean,
that's why you've included the deed restriction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so.
But simply coming back, you know, this is something that we do encourage through our housing plan too. So, I see it as multi-purpose. It can.
Yeah. Yeah,
it will work both
ways. And the carport, for your information, you were concerned about fire. It's not technically a zero lot line. It's just too close to the lot line.
Right.
It's just one of those old buildings that was built that way. And then it was a variance approval to allow the carport to be built in line with the existing house. But that wall on the carport is a 1-hour firewall, So you did require that when the carport garage was
built. Oh, that's at least good to know.
Well, they wanted to do a carport, but you can't do a carport because you're within 5 foot of setback. You can't have opening within 5 feet. It's a uniform building code requirement. So it had to be a solid wall, and if it's going to be that close, then it has to be 1 hour fire. So that's how it's constructed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of my comments.
Okay. So I'm going to close public comment again at this point. And Catherine, why don't you come back to us?
Okay. Part of my concern is that there's a lot going on the lot with the two sheds going down to one, and I think they'll be keeping the 80 square foot shed. But there is a brick walkway throughout, you know, the lot up into the entry of the home. What I'd like to do is make sure that whatever you pick for the driveway really blends in with the existing walkway, because I just think that it could look way too disjointed. And I think by taking away that smaller shed in the front, it will open up and give better visibility to the entry. So that's my concern.
Okay. Richard.
Yeah, me and my grandson, we drove by this piece of property, and I happened to meet the neighbor to the south, you know. And, you know, I just asked him, you know, what he thought. And he said that he didn't have a problem with the property other than his wife's going to miss looking at the garden in the front. You know, she's going to miss their view. This is an example of, like, you know, something that's been added, you know, kind of added on. And I think you're doing the best you can to integrate it all together. I just it's kind of, it's big, you know, but my main concern is that, you know, to get the proper, I know you try to do the articulation and try to get so it's not a too much of a visual in your face when you're on the street. I noticed that there's a lot of single story homes around in that whole neighborhood, and then there's some two-story ones. So other than some of what Commissioner Lure mentioned about the driveway, and followed up by you, Kevin, I think that if we just try to make it, I'd like to see, you know, I don't want to tell people all what the plan and stuff, but I'd like to see some kind of landscaping to try to, you know, incorporate it as well, you know, with the view of the neighborhood.
Michael?
Well, I think when you're adding upper floors and you get into two masses up there, it actually makes it seem smaller. I think it's actually, the neighbors will probably enjoy the fact that there's space between the two upper floor units and units of space. And I think the way it feels from the street and things is fine. The only issues I really have are as long as the fire department's looked at it, I get a little concerned about how kind of geologic this garage sequence is, because I'm not up to speed with how we ask people to renovate when so much is wrong. I mean, do they have extra carbon monoxide detectors in the home? Because really it's a four-car garage at this point, three of which could be front to back. And with no ventilation in that back section at all, and I'd actually rather see it stay wall, because if you put a window in, it's much easier for a flame to go through the window than it is through a wall. It's a real pocket back there, and I wonder about what the fire marshal says about carbon monoxide from all these vehicles that potentially are in a place that only has the front door and the window. It's like the back half of that depth. So that's more of a technical question. That's not an aesthetic question. It's not a question really for planning, but it's a question that I think when you get these accretions like this, I'd be concerned about, if I was one of the neighbors, about the fire safety, that's making sure everything is followed to the letter. The other thing, the only aesthetic thing that concerns me a little bit is in the elevations, where it talks about the railings and things around the new stair, or the stair up to the spaces above the garage. It looks like some of that fence is opaque, and it looks like it's getting up well over 5 feet. And I'd be a little concerned that that pocket in the corner of the entrance there in front of the office and before one goes up the stairs to the upper level is really not observable from the street. And I thought we had something in our codes about 4 feet for front yard gates and things like that. Do we consider that a front yard gate? This would be something that's more visible on A9 on the top part of the sheet. You can see the way the railing system of the stair becomes what looks to me to be an opaque fence next to the garage. So where it's at the landing, it's above 6 feet, and I understand that. That's a landing, and you've got to have a rail at some point. But then it never seems to drop down to much less than 5.5 or 6 feet. So that just seemed to me to be a really... I'm not sure what our codes are in terms of how we would consider that fence in there. It's an open rail up above, so I can't imagine one would be concerned about a closed fence down below if you've got an open rail up above. You see what I'm saying on A9? Top drawing? To the right of the garage door, to the right of the passage door to the garage.
Yeah,
it takes off at a railing height of the stair that's going up to the second unit.
I see what you're talking about. That's to the inside of the lot.
Yeah.
So there's actually no fence. It's not in the front yard, and there's actually in that location because it's outside of the setbacks. Mm-hmm. There's no fence height limitation.
Okay.
But they would need it anyway for, like you said, for protection purposes, for a landing. You had to have 42-inch high railing, so
okay. There'd
be a code requirement for that anyway.
And then
I don't know how visible it'll be either, because it's kind of tucked behind the garage. Right?
Well, just a question.
Okay.
I'm more concerned about the technical aspects of the multiple vehicles, carbon monoxide, the multiple vehicles with fuel inside a length that long in a residential situation. In a commercial situation, the wall construction would probably be more substantial. And if the agents testified that the carport was a one-hour wall, I'll take that for what it's worth. When we get into tight situations, we just had I can't remember which street it was on. We just had the fire on...
On Greenwood?
Yeah, Greenwood, which is perilously close to my home, that I was able to observe our responders in action, unfortunately, at a very close range. And I was surprised how fast that happened and how many calls went in to get people from other areas. And that was a modest structure. It wasn't anything close to the size this is. So that's my only concern is making sure that there's follow through on the fire protection aspects. Like I say, the massing of the upper floors I think is actually going to be pretty nice considering how large some of these projects we see come in at. I think it's actually nice to see the massing split up like that. I think it would be a wonderful place to work upstairs. And it doesn't bother me if it becomes a second unit. I think it would be a very nice, affordable second unit to be very attractive for somebody to be in. So I'm fine with, except for that, technical.
It will be reviewed, when it goes through plan review. Right now, we contract our plan review services for things like this anyway, out to California Code Check. So they're very capable, and I'm pretty comfortable with having them review it. They've done a good job, and I've had a long-standing relationship with them going back several years, and they do a good job. So,
I make sure, too, that when we get to our general plan, we have some name for this thing. Because if we've got three, you know, at some point we're going to get four. what do we do about that? Because it's the idea of a second way out and ventilation, and it's not covered now well, I don't think. I don't want to hold that against this applicant, because I think they've done a good job with a hobby being accommodated in a house. This could be a much larger structure. Mm-hmm. Much larger structure than what we're seeing here, that's much more invasive in the community. So I think it's pretty good. It just scares me to see really narrow side yards for wood construction to maintain with a lot of cars inside. That's all.
Well, I think I'm going to be the odd man out here, because I have a couple of issues with this. I understand. I get the fact that this house was built before we had setbacks and before we had codes. But if this were built today on this particular lot, the maximum width of the house would be 40 feet in order to accommodate the 5-foot setbacks on either side. This house is already 43 feet wide. Okay, if it were built, the length of the house today would be 80 feet. The maximum length of the house would be 80 feet. With this proposal, they're going to go 81 feet, 8 inches. So we have an existing situation, but we also have it creating a new situation in terms of equity, where these guys get to build a house that's longer and wider than people who follow the code. So, to me, it's sort of saying, because this was done the wrong way, you can use it to your advantage, which I don't know is appropriate. The other question is, you know, one of the findings that we have to make is that the project will not impair the character of the zone in which it exists, and I think that's a real, for me, that's a real question. The staff report characterizes the area as a mix of one- and two-story houses, but it's really predominantly one-story houses with a few two-story houses sprinkled here and there. And the other thing that strikes me is that this is an area which is very, very much not garage-forward. The typical pattern of garages in this area is on the back of the lot with the driveway going beside the house. A few houses have garages at the side, okay, but very, very few have garages that protrude forward of the living space. And so in terms of the design, I'm not sure that it's appropriate for the character of the neighborhood. I also think that there are also very, very few houses that have two stories at the front elevation, okay? The two-story houses that exist, the second story is in almost all cases set back a good bit, articulated back into it. And it seems to me that with a little thought and a little, you know, having lived in a neighborhood where there was a sort of particular pattern of setbacks, and there was one house that didn't meet that pattern, that was different, okay, it stuck out like a sore thumb. It changed the entire character of the neighborhood when that house was finally removed. So I'm a little bit concerned about what this structure, being so atypical of the area, is going to do in terms of the character of the zone.
Very good point. thanks for sharing. Yeah, when I was driving there, that was you articulated well what I was seeing, and that is neighborhood compatibility is an issue.
I guess the thing I would say, I appreciate those comments, and I don't disagree with many of them. But to me, when I look at the size of the apparent size of the upper level, the way they've pulled it back in from the sides, and the way they've got the occupation, the sense of occupation with the deck in the front, and the way that the roof's been kept lower than anything behind it, I think it all is capable of working there. There's something really very eclectic about seeing these walkways, and it's like a little hill town in and of itself. So it shows some occupation and care. I think that in this particular instance, the size of that addition is not such. I think if they were trying to link it to the back, I'd be very concerned. I think if they had the front and they were building the one in the back, I'd be concerned. But I think with the existing situation, this one is all right. I completely agree with taking advantage of the capacity to take advantage of non-conforming conditions. That's something I've been very cautious of whenever we've seen ones like this come up, but they actually aren't, they're actually giving more front yard space than they would have been required, and they're actually giving more side yard space on the upper levels than they required. So I do think there's been some sensitivity to making the piece smaller than other designs brought forward might have done. But I share some of the concerns. The other thing is, maybe it's the evening of the State of the Union, but we don't have any neighbors, which if there was a concern, I would think we'd at least see one neighbor. So.
I guess my concern, and your point, Dr. Tuft, is well taken, is the future possibility of linking these structures together. Would, seeing this, if we give them the variance, this is no longer non-conforming, would they, on the next round of this coral reef, if they plan on infill, or another applicant or another owner plans on infilling in between these structures, what is the regulatory structure for that?
Well, at this point, it's maxed on lot coverage, so that's it. Footprint of the building is not going to get bigger.
No, but they could second story that garage, the quadrennial tandem garage.
You can and you can't. Now, you're talking about entirely reconstructing that garage because structurally you wouldn't be able to support a second story on top of the existing portion of it, because your addition is going to have to be moved over 5 feet. That's going to bear right in the center of that garage, which means that whole non-conforming piece is going away that you're going to add a second story over. So there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of what-ifs there that probably make that unlikely. Because once you start moving back over that area, you got to be 5 feet over. 5 feet over puts you in the middle of the garage. You're not going to be able to support the second story that way. You're not going to be able to have posts going down into the garage below, because then it'll impede the parking spaces that are there. So you got problems with that.
Yeah, you know, there are floor systems, you know, a 16-inch I-joist, you know, could span that. That's only 15 feet and could support that second floor, and you could go up with the second floor fairly easy, because it is going to be three steps down from the existing structure, so you could drop it in. But what I'm concerned with is meeting both that. I don't have a problem with it the way it sits, the way the design sits, but Commissioner Teff's point is well taken, especially if that infills on that second floor, even if they do a 5-foot setback on the second floor. They could still get a corridor through there. You know, we essentially limited or conditioned another project for airspace, essentially airspace on another project that we had come forward. Can we condition this project with a deed restriction as such?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what we'd be achieving with the deed restriction.
What we'd be achieving is not allowing that whole linear side view to be a solid mass, and keeping it as two second story elements with a single story in between.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a discretionary proposal would be to do that. I still think that the likelihood of you being able to do something along the lines that you described is not very good, because you know, you're not only talking about how you're going to support that second floor of that area, you're talking about the foundation that's underneath it. And that's problematic, because regardless of if you put anything above that, the foundation that's probably under it probably is not adequate to support its second story. And so now you're redoing the foundation. Well, you can't be touching the foundation in the setback. So, you know, my experience with these things is it doesn't work. You know, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and that's the problem you run into every time. You know, the people want to go over there and start touching the stuff that's non-conforming, but you can't touch it. It needs to stay there. It's not adequate to support the second story. We're kind of done. So I'm, you know, on my side of things, a little less concerned about it from my experience. Now, if the commission as a whole wants to come up with some kind of deed restriction for this, I guess we could review that and see where you want to go with it. I'm not as concerned, I guess, as maybe you are, just having the experience of these things repetitively coming forward. It's one of the issues that come up. I mean, people want to do that. They're like, oh, we want to add on, and then they're talking about how they're going to support the second floor. It's going down into that setback and the foundation for the area that's in the setback, the portion of the home, and so that always creates problems. And it's something that's frustrating to the, you know, to the public even, you know, because we've had the conversation frequently.
Well, yeah, I mean, my feeling is that this property has enjoyed a great deal of latitude in the past. There was a variance that allowed for the garage, the second garage, to be added. There's been conditional use permits for the upstairs and the and we're really beginning to push the envelope here. We're at 49% lot coverage. You know, I mean, I'm 45% lot coverage. We are there. I mean, this is maxed out, and so I think that there needs to be an extraordinary sensitivity to the neighborhood that it's sitting in. And I'm not saying the project is not a good one, but I think a better effort can be made. I would like to see some vertical articulation in the front. I'd like to see at least looking at breaking up that mass door that goes all the way across and doing some sort of staggered, you know, two-door arrangement that would be less. I'm not going to design it, but I'd like those kind of techniques to be looked at in order to try and just reduce the vertical impact in an area where that kind of vertical impact is atypical for the neighborhood. That's all.
I appreciate what you're saying, but one of the things I think on this lot is that the house is so far back and there's a lot of vegetation and trees there that I think it does soften the whole effect. At least that's in my opinion. I don't feel that it will be as overwhelming, I think, as you do, because it's so far back on the lot line from Anchor. From Pacific. So I just had, I'm not seeing it exactly the same way that you are on that.
I appreciate that.
Well, yeah.
Different question, Scott. What's the minimum requirement as square footage before fire sprinklers are required? What's the final square footage on this? I couldn't parse it.
Yeah, the final square footage is what? The 26 and change? Or no, that's not.
Yeah, total enclosed area.
Yeah, if you're counting the garages.
Yeah.
It's 32 and almost 33.
Yeah, somewhere in the figure.
You got a lot of garage space.
Somewhere the figure 2,000 square feet comes to mind. The sprinklers are required after that. But that's a question more than a statement.
I'm not sure. Where our trigger is for the city of Morro Bay, all I'm recalling is what it was for Pismo for additions. Usually when we went into, you know, I'm not sure what our adopted standard is. I have to go look that up. I don't recall. actually ever hearing what the trigger is on an addition. So I have to follow up with that. I don't have a condition in the... I don't think there was a condition in the project for it, though. And it was, and it was reviewed by fire. I think it was just reviewed and approved.
Just for curiosity, what was it at PISMO?
When you were doing over 1,000 square feet, so for an addition would trigger the requirement.
Scott, was that retrofitting the whole structure or just the addition?
If you're adding over 1,000 square feet, you were retrofitting the entire structure.
And that was also based on the domestic water system being the sprinkler line.
Say that again?
That's also based on the domestic water system is the pressure behind the sprinkler system. Mm-hmm. It's
yes.
not a separate line like a commercial structure.
Correct. Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, if there's no further discussion, do we have a motion? Or is there further discussion?
Was there interest in conditioning the project about more square footage?
Well, I feel that I'd like us to discuss the addition of fire safety in the garage and making that a condition.
Is that something that we can do, Scott?
No, I would say that's probably outside of your purview. We adopt fire code requirements, the city does, and so in the example that I gave you for the Ski Pismo Beach, we adopted more stringent fire code requirements several years ago to require when fire sprinklers were triggered. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Morro Bay has done something like that, and so that would be potentially inconsistent with the code requirements adopted by the city council when we adopt our building and fire codes. So the idea is that they'd be compliant with those types of things. The expectation is you're going to have something that's compliant with the codes adopted by the city council.
Is this include something what Commissioner Lucas was mentioning about the carbon monoxide detectors? Can we condition that in there?
Well, they'll have to comply with the building and fire code as far as those go. That'll be something that's reviewed. And so, yes.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to restrict something in a technical area that Jerry potentially is more technically aware of these things than I am. But I don't want to get into being technically oriented about building systems. We have people to do that properly. But I do think it's important when we go about our general plan, when we have non-conforming buildings, where if we have less than 3-foot setbacks. I'm very concerned about if we would start to aggregate situations like this, we end up with something that affects the potential fire capabilities of the city to fight things. If you can't get people inside yards, and this is two of the yards, this is the rear yard and the side yard, mm-hmm. they're impacted by this. I don't know where the fire hydrant is. I'm not an insurance person. Any of that. It's just it becomes something that we need to be aware of, that we may want to talk to the fire protection people, making sure they're aware of the situation, the context of the house, because I don't want to over-condition anything, especially technically, that adds cost to someone's home. So I'm more interested in if we talk about the upper floor square footage.
Okay. Are there not some state requirements for carbon monoxide detectors now?
Yeah, there are requirements that you have, carbon monoxide, and they're in the current fire. I forget what the requirement is on the current one because it changed just a little while ago.
And there's on every level, you need one, and you need one in the hallway. Yeah. You don't need a carbon monoxide in the garage because they'd be going off too much.
Yeah, there's. So,
but you do need a fire sprinkler. You need not a sprinkler, but a smoke alarm in the garage.
Yeah.
And with the new construction or the addition, they would be linked together. But in the old construction, they would could be battery and non-linked. So
that building code requirements.
Yeah. What's the commission's feeling about conditioning this that if further additional square footage or that would need to be brought back before this commission or a future commission?
I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that was the case anyway, but it was 25%, right?
Right.
So if we did something like that, you want it to be a recorded condition?
I think it would need to be to put future buyers on notice.
That's good, because we would be able to reference this permit, then you would know what future permits came after it. So that's how I would do it.
Okay.
If that's the desire of the commission, obviously.
There seems to be a general consensus on that, I think.
I think one of the reasons I like that condition is if you look at the massing on the upper floors, there is a generous rear yard setback for the existing upper floor area. And they've expanded the side yard setback for the existing upper floor, and they've expanded the front yard setback for the existing upper floor. So they've pulled in the upper floor in a way that we're basically saying, representing the community, we're comfortable with the mass and square footage now, but we don't want to see a larger structure built on the property without a lot of new scrutiny by the community. So I think that's what I would say, is I'm willing to go along with the fourplex and the odd perimeter configuration, as long as we know that in the future someone else in our seats would be able to take a look at this on behalf of the residents.
And also, Scott, I have a question. If they remove the other shed in the front of the house, that would give them an additional 80 square feet that would go against the 43% or the 45%. So I think we have to be careful that we can't count that extra 80 square feet. Do you see?
I think if we can't put a condition to limit the expansion and require any future expansion of the structure to go back before the Planning Commission for review and approval.
That's fine.
I mean, that's the way I'm wording the condition. So any future addition, regardless of whether the shed goes away or not, just any future addition will require Planning Commission review and approval.
Thank you.
And then also to the commission, what do we think about, or what are your thoughts about requiring further articulation and the reduction in the driveway width? Maybe requiring a double front door instead of a single 16-foot square, wide door, or windows on what is that, the north side of that?
Personally, Personally, I would be very much in favor of seeing those things. I've expressed my concern. I would not be terribly comfortable dictating those as conditions. In other words, what I'd rather do is ask the applicant to come back and show us, better articulation and better, some a little more concern for the character of the neighborhood.
My concern on that is that there's a time factor there, and the time is money situation. So if we could give them direction to staff that would point them in the correct way, then they wouldn't have to come through this process again. But
I guess
I see both sides.
I guess I'd suggest we could always ask the applicant. I mean, when was it? It may have been the 16th when I was gone. Did you go over the garage door section of the, or was that the, we went over it in November or the first meeting in December? No, that document is not part of official code yet. However, it's been discussed publicly, and the momentum of the discussion was that in a situation where you had a front garage door to consider some type of articulation. I mean, my own personal recommendation would be that if I had that much square footage behind there, I would want to see something like translucent panels that let more light into the garage to work on the vehicles, and that's something that adds detail to the front. Two garage doors, I don't know. I don't know if there's large vehicles involved here in the collection or not, but I do think that if it's just if the double garage door of an inarticulated, non-articulated material, it would be less aesthetically pleasing relative to the discussions we've had on record than one that had some articulation. So we could ask that they consider that. But I agree. I don't want to be up here designing everybody's house.
No,
that's not.
That's my
right.
Well, I hear a certain level of concern here for the articulation issue. I don't know where we want to go with that. I don't know how strong the level of concern is. Maybe. Sure. We'll open public comment for a question from Commissioner Sorensen.
Hello. I was wondering, there's been a lot of conversation here at the table regarding the garage doors and just not having a huge garage door without articulation, or perhaps one idea was with the translucent windows to give a little bit more light. How would the homeowner feel about incorporating that into the
plan? No problem whatsoever. Be happy to do that. Be happy to add windows on that north wall also. I think those are the two things that you brought up.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I I mean, I suppose one option would be to leave it a little bit open in terms of, I mean, because obviously we don't want to say, okay, you have to go to Home Depot and get garage door number 16-46, you know.
And definitely not Home Depot.
Yeah, maybe. Wait a minute. Hey, I like Home Depot.
Miners. Miners? Let's get a Miners.
Would it be appropriate to express the desire for a greater degree of articulation on the front facade and direct staff to work with the applicant to achieve that?
Now we're talking about a couple different things, and I want to make sure I do what you want. So you're talking about articulation across the front, and then we were talking about, you know, a more architecturally pleasing garage door. So those are two different things.
Right.
Okay, so we have that front elevation of the addition has the, you know, the second floor pulled in to the garage like this, and you would like prefer it to be stepped back because it has a deck that comes out that provides articulation to the front.
I actually think that the articulation on the structure is fine. I just think that, you know, it's just the front door, it's just the garage door, and specifically just because that is such a, in that neighborhood, like Commissioner Teff said, is garages are mostly placed towards the rear. And so, you know, so that's what I see as the biggest fallacy in the design. And then just the windows on the north side.
Okay.
But that's my thoughts.
I think that, you know, the architect has no problem. I don't think we need to put it as a condition to pick out a garage door for him, but and then regarding the windows on the side, I'm not convinced that we really need to do anything there either. No, but that's my comment.
Well, I guess for me, it's kind of a scale of things, you know. I mean, it's like the least I'd like to see is a better looking garage door, you know, a better looking garage door, and sort of then the kind of the next thing would be maybe to have some maybe to have d- double doors instead of single doors, and then the next thing would be sort of to have one of the single doors set back a little bit so you have some articulation, and then the best thing would be to have all that and then have some vertical articulation in the front. And you know, I personally think we could have a little less vertical articulation on the sides and put a little bit of that in the front and have the same size second story, you know, but just a little bit less imposing from the street. So it's kind of like what my preferences would be, kind of go up in that order. So I can't, you know, ideally I'd like to see all of them. It's kind of hard to put that into some sort of a condition, though.
Well, I mean, from the, you know, I mean, I can get part of it, you know, I mean, that the applicant shall, you know, add windows along the north elevation. That's a condition we can add to it. That the applicant provide a more architecturally detailed garage door. Now, if you wanted to get specific, you can do the offset thing. I know they have a specific use for it that they have intended, so I don't know that two garage door bays really worked for them, and I'd maybe want to have them speak to that before we added a condition like that to it, because that, you know, may not work for what they're looking to do. I don't know.
You know, honestly, and I'm sorry just for speaking out of turn, but honestly, I think we're getting into a situation where we really just need to turn it back to them and say, show us what you can do to make this. We've given you some direction. Show us what you can do to make this more consistent with the neighborhood. That would be, I mean, to me, I realize it's a delay, but to me, that's, if I were the applicant, that's what I would want. I wouldn't want somebody to say, you need to do this and you need to do that and you need to do this. I would want somebody to say, here's the direction, you know, to take it in that direction.
I guess I agree and I disagree. I if the design didn't have the articulation in it, I would say take it back. But the fact that we've got the occupiable upper floor toward the street, we've got a stairwell in the joint between the two building masses, these are all things that talk about habitation and people coming and going and activating the facade already. I'm actually a little leery of saying things like vertical articulation, because I think in some ways you make the building smaller when you put that, when that second level deck cuts across the face of the building, because you kind of cut it into a top and bottom. So to me, in this particular case, I'm okay with the assumption, based on the discussion, that the notes would say that we are going to have a different articulation on the garage door and on the north elevation. I'm fine to let staff discuss that with the understanding from the meeting that we are asking people to consider the document that we already have in play that's not recorded yet when considering some of their pieces of the building. So this is something we're actually playing those guidelines backward, and someone has agreed to take that into account, which I think that's a good move. And we don't have a big community swell here. I would say it's easier to play out the community's wishes when the community is here to articulate those wishes. We certainly don't seem to have any lack of shy people in the community when we have one that is not to their liking. So short of everybody, like I say, short of everybody watching the State of the Union, I'm struck by the silence in the room from the community.
Catherine?
I agree with Michael. I think if we take care of having the garage door have a little bit more interest, would probably be the word I would use, and then on additional windows, I'd be fine.
I also agree.
Okay, so we're getting there. Well, so
I guess let me try to make a motion on this. that get back to work. Looking for the numbers here. I move that we approve resolution number PC 03-15 with the addition of the deed restriction requiring any future development be brought before the Planning Commission, and the direction to staff or to the applicant to work with the staff to increase interest in the front door, the garage door, and windows on the north elevation and the addition. Anything further?
I'll second.
We have a motion on the table, and we have a second. Do we have discussion on the motion?
No? Just the one thing I would say, I'll be happy when we get, get the design guidelines as documents
at the
that
counter.
We can
yeah.
we can stand upon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's it.
Okay. So then, could we have a roll call?
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Chair Teft?
I still have to vote no.
Commissioner Lure?
Yes, except on condition where I forgot to include the driveway reduction, the reduction of the driveway width.
So you want to amend your motion and then take it back through the vote?
Yes.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry.
Do we have it? There's a second.
I'll still.
To 16 end. Feet? Was that right?
I think 16 feet, yeah.
Okay.
Or to the maximum allowed. Or. No more than 16 feet.
To a maximum of 16 feet.
Yeah, to a maximum of 16 feet.
Okay, I can do that.
And I'll still second.
Okay, we'll do this again.
Sorry about that omission.
It's okay. Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Chair Teft?
I'm still a no.
Commissioner Lure?
Yes.
Commissioner Sorensen?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes 4-1.
Okay, thank you. That was fun. Moving on to public hearing item number B2. Does anyone need a break before we move on to B2? Okay, let's take 5 minutes then for. Okay, we're back and feeling refreshed, and moving on to item number B2, which is case number UP0-444 at 176 Java Street here in Morro Bay, and I think Joan is going to talk to us about this. Or not.
Good evening, Chairman Teft and Commissioners. The item before you is request for conditional use or coastal development permit. I keep getting those two backwards. At 176 Java Street to allow an addition exceeding 10% of the existing floor area to a conforming structure in the appeals jurisdiction. The property is located in North Morro Bay, to the west of Highway 1, within the R1 single-family residential zone. The lot lies, like I said, within the Coastal Commission appeals jurisdiction because of its proximity to mapped ESH, environmentally sensitive habitat area. The proposed addition is also consistent with the current requirements set forth in the zoning ordinance with regard to setbacks, lot coverage, height, and parking. The project site lies adjacent to Elva Paul Creek Corridor, a mapped environmentally sensitive habitat area. It's also listed as Unnamed Creek or No Name Creek in historical planning documents. You may have seen that. And pursuant to the municipal code, the applicant was required to hire a qualified biologist, in this case Kevin Merck Associates, to assess the property and the adjacent Esha area. The proposed addition is consistent with the LCP policies related to the environmentally sensitive habitat area. Policy 1105 dictated that an ESH report was completed or was necessary to be completed for the property by biologist Kevin Merck, and he concluded that the property does not contain habitat meeting the city's definition or the California Coastal Act definition of environmentally sensitive habitat, and that the project will have a less than significant impact on the environment. Also, pursuant to 11.22, the ESH boundary was precisely delineated by the biological consultant, and LCP policy 1114 defines 50 feet as the appropriate buffer. And it's important to note that this proposed development is outside of the 50-foot buffer zone, and that there's no reduction or exceptions being sought. This is the house as seen from Java Street. The picture to the left is looking towards the ocean, and the picture to the right is looking towards Highway 1. This is the site plan. Note that the reduction in the size of the deck, the proposed addition, pardon me, is outlined to the right in black, as well as the top of the bank line is just to the left of those trees pictured on the right-hand portion of the lot. You can see the top of bank line, and the 50-foot buffer is measured 50 feet from that line. This is the existing floor plan, 1,760 square feet of habitable floor area. You can see that this is the proposed floor plan. You can see in the existing floor plan that the deck is large. It was approved in, I believe, 1985, if my memory serves me correctly, at 2,100 square feet, and it has been reduced to approximately 500 square feet, the decking in the back. So I tried to increase the contrast and the brightness so you could see the hatching to see the proposed additional square footage there. The project is converting 162 square feet of an existing study into an enlarged garage, as well as 571 square feet that will include an enlarged enlarged study, kitchen, and master bedroom. And it also includes some interior remodeling to the hallway, laundry room, and existing master bedroom. These are the elevations. You can see the addition is lightly shaded in gray. The front elevation will stay the same. You won't see any change from the front of the house. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt the revised resolution number 4-15, which includes the findings and conditions of approval for Coastal Development Permit CP0044 for the proposed addition at 176 Java. And the revision to the resolution, the changes were, it was stated that it was a conditional use permit and it is a coastal development permit. So I apologize for the typo. That is it, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Do we have questions for staff?
I can't tell on my drawings, but does the garage still retain the 20 by 20 two parking?
Yes, sir.
Required? Okay.
Yes, sir.
The heater, the water heater doesn't infringe on that space?
No, sir.
Any other questions? Okay, so this is the time for public comment. If the applicant or his representative would like to come forward and speak, that would be great.
I'm new to this process, so just cool me.
Well, give us your name, and then you can say whatever you'd like to say. Keep it clean.
Well, I'm Joe Cannon. I'm a contractor. The people who own this project actually live in Washington State, so I am the agent. I don't have any issues, as far as I know. We're copacetic.
Okay. Are there any questions for the representative? No. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Seeing no other members of the public present, I won't call for additional public comment. So we'll bring it back to the commission for discussion. Who'd like to start? How about Richard? How about you start us out today?
I took my bike ride around that whole area, and I think that one of the things I like, once again, there was in a previous project, I like the 50-foot buffer on the Esha. And the project, I think, is a good project because it kind of brings in and addresses some of that articulation that we talked about earlier in our guidelines. So I think it's pretty... For me, it looked pretty straightforward.
Michael?
Yeah, I think this is a great example of a lot of people just build large, simple additions, and this one's a small, intricate addition. Mm-hmm. And it all looks like it's adding value. It actually looks like it's more respectful of the Esha, and I think there are some very nice design things in the house, the solar tubes. There's a attention to natural light that we don't see in a lot of projects. So I think it's a nice little job.
Yeah, I'll second those comments. You know, and then because that's house, it's ranch style, that neighborhood, it's all in, you know, bumped up to the 15-foot front setback. All the addition goes to the rear. So it's gonna keep the front facade the same. So I don't think it's gonna have much impact on the community at all. I think it's gonna be a nice little addition for the owners.
I agree. I like it when the additions are in the rear of the property, and that it really doesn't have a whole lot of. It doesn't impact the neighbors that much. It's a cute house, and I think that it'll be enhanced by these changes.
Well, I'm impressed by the detail that the interior work that's going to be done. I would recommend that the owners stay in Washington until you're finished. appreciate the fact that I went on Google Maps and sort of checked it out, and I appreciate the fact that this addition really doesn't interfere with the relationship of the adjoining houses to the Esha. It's not blocking anybody off from the creek or anything like that. So I think it's great. I have no negative remarks. So I think we're probably ready for a motion.
I'll make a motion here to approve the, what do I call it, the amended resolution number PC4-15 as amended.
I'll second.
So we have a motion on the floor and a second. Do we have any discussion on the motion? I don't think so. Okay. So let's have a roll call.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Lohr?
Yes.
Commissioner Sorensen?
Aye.
And Chair Teft?
Yes. See, that wasn't hard. Okay. So we have no unfinished business tonight, and no new business. So we will move on to our new section, which is which we've been having informally all along, but we now have it formally, which is Planning Commissioner comments and future agenda items.
Okay. I'll go up first. I was just wondering where we sit on a couple of my suggestions and concurrence by the Planning Commission.
Well, we've been in the process of reorganizing, so I haven't had the chance to do much work, and I'll speak to that a little bit more here in a minute, I suppose. But I haven't had an opportunity to, one, finish the design guidelines. That's the number one on my list. And then, two, get the solar request for a letter, and I was going to put something together for you for that. I just haven't had a chance to get around to it just because of all of the work that goes along with reorganizing departments and creating new departments that did not previously exist. So as, you know, that sort of shakes out, then I'll have a little more time to move forward. I certainly, and I meant to actually give you a call about this, if you want to move that, you know, because it was going to be a letter to the council, if I'm not going to be able to get to it in a manner that's timely enough for you, certainly the commission itself could write the letter and send it off because it might be a meeting or two before I actually bring that forward. So, you know, if you want to have it happen faster than that, because the council is in the process of looking at goals.
Yeah.
So the timing of it might be such that, you might want to have some concurrence among the commission and draft a letter on your own potentially. Because, again, it's going to be a meeting or two before I bring it back.
Okay. What would the process... I'm sorry.
Can we do that? Can we confer among ourselves on the text of the message without violating the Brown Act? I'm not sure we can.
We can probably assign it to a two-person subcommittee that can bring it back to us.
That would be the way that I would suggest doing it, and then you get concurrence, and then we send it, and then you can deliver it. The council. Short of that, I will bring something back in a meeting or two. I just, seeing the way timing of things is working, you know, and knowing that it's going to be difficult for me to get to it at least immediately.
Okay. I didn't
give you that option.
I didn't mean to rush you. I was just curious as where it fit into the process. But a two-person commission or a two-person subcommittee, I think would be a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
So who would like to be on it with Gary?
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Gary
and
Gary.
You can write.
Okay. So we're going to take that off your plate. We're going to give you time to occasionally have dinner with your family.
They'll appreciate that. Thanks.
So then, can you bring that back to us at our next meeting? Is 2 weeks long after that? Okay, good.
We have to advertise the text if we vote on it? So it has to be together in like a week?
No, there's no advertising necessary. You're going to be making a request that the city council direct staff to work on bringing back ordinance language that reflects that. It's basically you're asking the council to initiate an amendment, essentially.
Okay.
Well, that could be either a new business or an unfinished business item, right? So it gets agendized, so the public's aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. If we're going to bring it back at the next meeting, then I'll put it on there as an unfinished business item.
Okay. And so, just to clarify, we're looking at both the solar ordinance, solar ready ordinance, then also design guidelines for the commercial areas.
You could I would request. That's great. That's a good point. You could request both of those. Yeah, certainly. That'd be.
I believe it should be two separate letters.
Yes, definitely two separate letters. And so, do we bring that back? I missed that part about. Do we bring that back as new business or unfinished business or?
We've been talking about these things a couple of different times, so I think it's appropriate to bring it back as unfinished business.
Okay, great.
And it would be great. If you guys could get the text to staff, so it could go in the packet, right? But not communicate it with any one of us in the meantime.
Yeah. Okay.
Done deal.
Okay.
Did you have other questions or issues?
I have a question. You mentioned twice about reorganization. Is it appropriate to discuss the reorganization?
Certainly, I was going to do it under manager
your
comments.
Yeah.
So, but if you're not done with commissioner comments, I mean, we can wait until it is one of my items. Are you guys done?
Is it good with you if he discusses it after? Okay. Any questions or issues or suggestions or new agenda items at this end? And I have none, so you're on.
Okay. The first item on my list, things to talk to you about, is the reorganization. We are reorganizing public services into more of a public works department and reorganizing some of Rec and Parks to pull street maintenance, which is sitting over there right now, and to bring it into public works, which is probably where it makes a lot more sense to be housed. And we are pulling, you know, because all that would be then sitting under, there'd be more stuff sitting under the public services director, Rob Wyvick, and so they're pulling me out with planning and building, potentially parking and some other things, and making me a standalone department, which will be community development department. So things will be changing a little bit. You also see to this evening that Rob's not here. Well, he's not required to be here. When right. they made the Department of Community Development and put me in charge of it, then it's just you get me. So that's what you'll be seeing from now on. And internally, we're reorganizing some of the offices a little bit, moving things around, and working out what, you know, budgetary things go along with changing, you know, pulling departments apart and that type of thing. And so we're early on in the process. We're supposed to be done by February 1. Cross my fingers and hope that happens. But that's they announced the initial reorganization about a week ago, and now we're moving forward with implementation, which is why I've been busy and not been able to get to some of these other things, because it is time-consuming.
Scott, what's your staff structure?
Staff structure is I have underneath me, I have two contract planners, Joan, Whitney, full-time planners, Cindy, Jason, and then we also have a grant writer, Jessica Velasquez, who's under me. And then we have building. Right now, a longtime building inspector left a while ago and went to move to Paso Robles. And I'm still in the process of figuring out what to do there, mostly because of the way the position is, the job description goes with it, and the pay scale with it isn't going to probably give us the technical background that we need, so I'm looking at other ways to bring that technical expertise in-house. One of the things that I'm concerned about is plan reviews. And while we can always ship those out to an outside party, it'd be nice to have some of it in-house so people could come and talk with someone at the front counter that's actually doing them. So I'm working on options for that and looking at city fees as well so that we're paying for the service that's rendered. So those are some of the things that are going into it, which is why we haven't replaced it on a full-time basis. We have a contract inspector 5 days a week right now. And then we send, and then he can do some of the, you know, the residential plan checks for simple additions and things like that. But anything more complicated than that, we send out to California Code Check. He's actually from California Code Check and placed in the city for right now. We have a building permit tech. That's going to be under me. It was a little bit separated before an admin. And then overall admin staff, we're still working that out. Between Rob and I, you know, we're going to stay in the same building. At least that's our, you know, that's the way things are shaping up right now. And how we split the admin staff between us is still up in the air. We had one meeting today to see where we were going to put some folks that were coming into our building, because there's not a lot of room in it. And then next meeting is going to be Thursday, and we're going to talk about how we're, you know, splitting up the admin staff and make sure that we're covered as far as putting packets together and sending out information, you know, follow-up information to the Coastal Commission and things like that. So it's all in play right now.
A question for just on the details. What's the hours for inspections now? They were before they were half days.
Yeah. We're operating inspections about 10 to 3 typically.
Okay.
Right now, that's when we're going to have that's when inspectors announce that's the 5 hours you cover. And it seems to be working well. We're not getting any complaints or getting few complaints anyway about it. So it seems to be, it's the Band-Aid on it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, you know, you have a full-time person there, so we have somebody that's in-house, you know, 8 hours a day, so they can be responsive to the public. That's my biggest concern is having somebody available to answer questions. We get quite a lot of questions that come in on the building side of things, and mm-hmm. you know, we're we're maintaining right now, but we're going to get busier, and so it's going to be a problem, so we need to get a full-time solution.
You know, if I could make a comment on fee structure, too. I know this is always a dicey issue, but one of the problems with raising the building fees, you know, the higher they go, the more non-compliance we're going to get. And so there's a trade-off there that if the fees go higher, then people are going to bootleg in more things, and we're going to have more and more problems. So that's always an issue.
I'm aware of the issue.
Okay.
But on the other hand, if things are getting busier, then that generates more fees with the current schedule, right? I mean,
I'm doing projections right now for things that we've had going through the process. The list that you get in your back, I use that. So I'm working on projections for that to see where we're going to come in revenue-wise and what that looks like on the building side of things. And that'll sort of inform the process moving forward about where we go. We have some of the, at least in Morro Bay, some of the least expensive building permit fees in the county.
I was going to ask, aren't we about half of San Luis?
Yes. And well below a lot of the other jurisdictions as well. So I don't think we're looking at, you know, drastic changes if we do make changes. But we'd be probably looking at minor increases, I think, probably, just to cover the service that we want to provide and that we need to provide. I mean, that's the important part, is get the service in here and that we have it so it's available to the public, because not being able to serve them, you know, fully with the folks that are able to answer questions and do some of the plan review in-house is really not serving them that well. When it's all outside, then even if their local firm that we're using right now, California Code Check, is based in the Tascadero, it's still not in the city, you know, so...
Just another comment, too, on the structure for building, just because this is what I deal with mostly, too. It's really handy, and the cities I deal with that have it is to be able to bring, you know, small projects over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for one thing, it cuts down staff time, it cuts down sending it out, and it also makes it much more amenable for people to come and get permits, too, so...
Well, and that's one of the focuses I have right now, is streamlining some of our processes, both building and planning-wise, and reducing review times. We weren't doing real well, but that had to do with staff changeover, and we're reducing them a little bit now. I mean, we're within at least the, you know, parameters that are required by the state from on the planning side of things. And we're doing pretty good utilizing California Code Check and getting our plan checks on things like single-family houses turned around in a couple of weeks. So that's working okay. We're starting to get it pulled down to that time frame, which is where I want to be. So.
I'm sorry, anyone else?
You know, I just, more so for the public, you know, I go to the park a lot, and, you know, people talk about, you know, like wages, for instance, of people working in the city. And one of the things I mentioned at the last WARFCAC meeting, and I think I want to reiterate it, you have the wages, if you put that aside. One of the things that people have to realize is knowledge and, more importantly, integrity in the staff. And it's the basis of trust. And I, for one, just being on this commission for this short amount of time, it's a trust that's earned both ways. And I speak from the heart here. I think that you're a big asset to the city of Morro Bay. And it's a, well, Pismo's loss, but it's all gain.
I appreciate that.
We had some little informal comments about a question about whether there were any plans to rehire a code enforcement officer. Have you heard anything along those lines?
That's a good question. It's something that we frequently talk about. You know, the question is, you know, we have X number of funds available, and what do you mm-hmm. do with those? And a lot of times, code enforcement officers are sold on the fact that they'll recoup money doing their job, and so it kind of somewhat pays for them, and you can maybe hire someone on a part-time basis. The problem with that is the city has, you know, been reluctant in the past to go down the road taking a hard line on things. Normally, the idea is, you know, when we do code enforcement internally, and it's kind of shared between the various departments, is we're really just looking to get compliance. We want you to comply
right.
with it. We're not, you know, we're not looking to penalize people, and that's kind of been the, I think, the sort of tilt of the city for many years. And so that would be a drastic change, and one, people probably wouldn't, it probably wouldn't be received real well. So it's something that, at least internally when we talk about it, we're cognizant of. But it has been something that's been coming up more frequently on the radar of the City Council.
Well, we had a code enforcement officer for many years, and then during the when the budget crashed, basically that was one of the things that got lost. But you know, because we can pass all kinds of you sign ordinances and design guidelines, and if people know that there's no code enforcement officer, it's like, oh, what?
Yeah, I mean, the process that we use now takes probably a little bit longer than it would with a code enforcement officer, because it goes through the department, we send out letters, if we don't get compliance, then it's turned over to the office of the city attorney and then goes through that process. We have the ability to issue citations now. We try more along the lines of getting compliance than
right.
citing folks, but we do have that ability, and the city could always kind of change tack on that a little bit, but the system, you know, the way that we do it now works okay. Similar to how other folks do it that don't have code enforcement officers, cities do it that don't have code enforcement officers. It's kind of how much time do you have to spend on the code enforcement is how well it gets, you know, it happens. You know, when we have more time, code enforcement happens in a faster and probably better manner. Now, when you're really busy, you don't have a lot of time to pay attention to pay to it, then it takes a little bit longer.
We're going to keep you busy, Scott. and Rob, I know you're out there watching Channel 20, and we're going to miss you. Okay.
I have a couple of other things.
Oh,
that was
I'm
just
sorry.
The reorganization. We had the appeal at the last City Council meeting for 1000 Ridge Way, and the City Council upheld the Planning Commission's decision, basically denying the time extension that went through on the parking exception for that. We do have the Planning Commissioners Academy coming up. I am working on the budget on that right now, since it's shared with Rob about what the availability is there. But it sounds like after talking with him that that's going to be a possibility. And so I'd like to get from you folks who's interested in going, and then I'll work out the details of it. Catherine, I know you indicated previously that you wanted to go, but. If you can, the time frame, it's March 4th through the 6th, so that's a Wednesday through Friday, and it's down in Newport, so Southern California. So if you give a little bit of thought to that and, can let me know possibly if you're interested in going in the next week or two, that'd be great. Our deadline for making the reservations would be February 3rd for the discounted rates for hotel rooms and things, and so... So the sooner you get back to me, the better. We can still make reservations after that. It's just you're paying the full boat at that point. So I'll be following up with you if I don't hear from you with emails. anyway, so that's coming up. And that's always something that's interesting. I don't know how many of you have gone in the past. No. Okay. It's always good there. You know, you get to go through other workshops with other planning commissioners and other jurisdictions. And you get to hear about what problems and issues they have going on, which I think is kind of interesting to see what they're doing versus what we're doing. And I think it's always educational and definitely worthwhile if you have the time and the availability to go. I would certainly encourage you to do so. I will probably accompany you down there. At least I'll be the one goes. We'll see. I always say I'm going to be the one that goes for these things, and then something happens and I end up not going. I will try my best to go down there, so I'll be around. Anyway, so if you would, in the next week or two, if you want to go, at least reach out, and then I'll be following up with emails, pinning you down for sure to make, to figure that out. So, what else do I have? We already talked about the design guidelines and the solar letter. Probably two meetings out for the design guidelines, the way it sits right now, and what I have going to council coming up right now. We're dealing with goals and some other things with that, and so my focus has kind of been shifted towards that and the reorganization, but we're going to be done with that here in a little bit, and then I'll be coming back to the design guidelines and finishing that document. I've gone about a third of the way through like the production document for it. I have all the information in there, but it's putting it in something that looks polished is where I'm at right now. So, and that's it. That's all I have.
I just wish they wouldn't call it the Planning Commissioner Academy. It sounds like we're going to have to wear little uniforms, with white shirts and Bermuda shorts and saddle shoes.
Well, I'll be the
Yeah. Okay. So are there any other issues, items, or comments? If not, then we will adjourn to the next regular Planning Commission or Planning Commission meeting here at the Veterans Hall on February 3rd, 2015. Thank you.